Everyone has a story. I get them to tell it. Welcome to the Aaron Bender Podcast, conversations with media personalities about their personal and professional lives and journeys. Thank you so much for all your support. The more of you who subscribe, download all the episodes, share, rate, review, the more stories we can share. Before we get to my conversation with my guy DJ Head, a little about my story. I'm a widowed dad of two girls who just lost their mom, a grieving husband, a man in recovery trying to reconnect with the world with fresh eyes, faith, and perspective, a college journalism professor, a white guy in a world of injustice, a 20-year broadcast media veteran who had his dream job, then lost it. A year and a half ago, God gave me a gift, an opportunity to stop, step back, and breathe so I could learn about love, vulnerability, forgiveness, grace, self-care, patience, and understanding. I first talked with DJ Head for a podcast I did a couple of years ago. Had to bring him back for this new one. Head and Chuck Dizzle are homegrown radio, Monday through Saturday nights in LA on Real 92.3. And that's fitting because Head's all about real authenticity and honesty. There he is.
Sheesh.
What's up, man?
Mondu Bender, what's popping, bro?
Just trying to make it through today.
You made it through today, bro. Today ain't shit.
Yeah, you know, if we can kind of make it through the fire of the last 18 months, then, you know, today's not so bad. Let's
bro, today ain't nothing, bro. You got this. You know what I'm saying? This shit's stupid.
I know Head's time is short. Head's time is tight.
Nah, it's cool. We got time.
What do you have going on today?
Everything, bro. It's all kind of shit going on today.
How do you, because you do have so much going on. How do you personally keep track of it all? Because I know just recently you actually put out something like, hey, I might be looking for a personal assistant.
Bro, I think what it is it's really just I have a solid team around me that allows me the luxury of being able to do my thing. But that's all. It's not really that complicated. I just think that I'm a creative. So I just got so much shit in my mind that I want to get out. And it's just like, I got all these ideas and philosophies and things that I want to say and like just all of these things that I want to do. So I think it just comes down to really being able to organize it and execute.
Where do you find that balance between big picture and I want to do all this shit today?
I think macro in general, like I don't really have ideas that can be scaled. If that makes sense.
Whatever it is you've got going on, it's long term. It's marathon.
It's a marathon, bro. I don't think short term no more. Like I used to think that way, but luckily I have individuals around me and people that have been in my in and around my life that allows me to think bigger.
What changed?
That's a good question. I think what it is me just understanding the way things work and not being afraid to, I think what it actually low key, I think the biggest thing that happened for me is just acceptance. I just accepted the fact that I'm not in control. And I think that's what human beings don't do that, because I was just having this conversation. I'm glad you asked me that. I was having this conversation with one of the homies, right? And with one of my homegirls. And I said, think about how vain humanity is. Humanity as a species are incredibly vain, bro. Like we'll take a dog, right? And the dog has a mother. We'll take the dog away from its mother and be like, this is my dog. And his name is Timmy. Like that ain't even the dog's name. You know, like how do you know his mom named him Timmy? One, two, how do you know the dog wanted to come home with you? You just think he's cute. So, and then we go into a forest and we just cut down trees and be like, yeah, we need to make houses and beds and paper. And then we'll go in the ocean and be like, yeah, we're going to just dump all of this over here because, you know, it is what it is. Like,
right.
Human beings are the most vain thing I think has ever existed on this planet, probably ever in life. And I was saying all that to say, I think that the vanity allows us to do certain things. Like, it allows us, the vanity that we all have as, like, entitlement, as being the dominant species on in existence allows us to have ideas and we just execute them. And it just be like, hey, this is what I'm doing. Like, oh, I'm gonna start a podcast. It's like, yeah, but who invited you to the podcast sphere? Or, hey, I'm gonna like be an Instagram chick and I'm gonna sell flat tummy tea. It's like, well, who told you you had a flat tummy?
And I've said this for a long time, even before my faith really was tested and strengthened. The idea that anybody would think that we are the epitome of existence, like how arrogant of us to think that we are the highest power.
Bro, it is. You know what, though? Just to play the other side of the fence, though. I have a whole podcast dedicated to God being a woman. I believe that God is a woman, right? And the reason I believe that God is a woman is because look at the things that, quote unquote, Christianity or Catholicism teaches us about God. Worship me, tell everybody about me, don't worship anything but me, don't keep me a secret. What does that sound like to you? You know what I'm saying? I want you to go door to door and tell everybody that I'm the greatest. Does that not sound like a woman to you? I don't want it to sound like blasphemy, what I'm saying. The way my brain works, it has to make logistical sense. And that just makes sense to me. So I think that the way we have given context to quote unquote God or the higher power, I don't believe the God or higher power is a woman. I mean, is a man. It can't be a man, like based on the things that I've been taught.
And
I know you think I'm crazy, but I'm just,
no. I here's the thing. And this is what I was going to tell people as they're listening to this. We're only a few minutes in, and this is basically the type of shit that things are going to be happening for the next little while. If you go on Instagram at DJ Head, on Twitter or whatever social media you're on, you're going to get this type of raw honesty. For anybody who heard our last podcast, there was a lot of honesty, a lot of realness, and there are some questions I didn't get to ask, or I just didn't even think to ask at the time. But I do want to say, coming back on to this podcast now, I've got to apologize for the way I handled the last podcast, our last conversation, because I was touting your honesty and your realness while hiding mine. Wow. And while not being real with people, not being real with myself and my family and my coworkers and the people around me in my circle. And, you know, after I lost my job, and after my wife's cancer diagnosis, there were a few people I reached out to, you being one of them, just to have a real conversation to say, hey, I hope you're doing okay. And here's how I'm doing. And the fact that you picked up that call, the fact that we got to have that conversation, it meant the world to me, man. And I just wanted to apologize for not being real with you a couple of years ago when we talked for that podcast. And I want to thank you for still being in my life and still being my friend. I appreciate that, man.
Man, come on, bro. Like, I rock with you. I like you, Bender. I really, you know, like, I really have a select few white people that I really, really enjoy. You know what I'm saying? And you one of them. You in that category. You know, there's a bin. Like, I have, you know how you have a bin for recyclables? Like, I got a bin for favorite white people. And so, like, I think that, like, you know, you in there. And I just think that, one, I think you genuine. But then also, two, I feel like there's a select few individuals who gravitate towards me and accept me in my rawest form. And so you're one of those people who's always been accepting of me in my purest form. And I know that I come off very abrasive sometimes to people. A lot of people think I'm rude. Some people think I'm an asshole. I don't get into the depths of that, but I just say that to say the people who do voluntarily engage with me, I gotta salute them. I gotta give them props. And I don't think that you owe me an apology, because people arrive at the destination that they arrive at when they arrive. And I've learned, like I said, I'm not in control. And that's going back to the vanity thing. Once you realize, and this has been the most key thing that I've ever discovered being 37 years on this planet, right? Once you understand and accept, it's not about the understanding, it's about the accepting. Once you accept that you are not in control, That's when you fully can maximize your existence. That's when you fully walk in your purpose. And that's when you fully understand your full power, because I stopped trying to be in control of everything. Oh, I want a dog. I'm gonna get a dog. It's like, no, the dog will come when the dog is supposed to come. Right. So, oh, I want a wife. The wife is going to come when the wife comes. Like the kids, same thing. Everybody is caught up on this, what I want to do and me and my goals and shit like that. And, you know, the old saying, how do you make God laugh? You know, tell him your plans. Right.
Right. Right.
And it's just like, just understand and accept you're not in control. Once you accept that, that's when you fully are open to the mic, to the cosmos about what's supposed to be for you, as opposed to what you think or what you want. So I'm just saying that to say you arrive at what you arrived at when you arrived, and you don't owe me an apology for nothing.
I got you, Head. Thank you, man. I appreciate that. A few weeks ago, you posted on your Instagram about, this is one of the things that I regret not talking with you about a couple of years ago for the other podcast, was your white family, your white Japanese family. We talked a lot about your mom. How's she doing, by the way?
My mom is good. She's good.
Talked about her. You helped buy her a house, and you know, she's all set up. But the Nakahama family, that's a family I wanted to talk with you about a couple of years ago, and I regret not bringing it up. We talked about so much. Yeah. And I don't know, it was like a day or two later, I'm like, I forgot to ask about Ernie. I forgot to ask about, I don't think I knew Hiro's name a couple of years ago, but tell me about that family, how you ended up with them.
Well, I grew up obviously impoverished, and my mom did her best, you know what I'm saying? But it just was what it was. So what ended up happening was when I was in high school, I've always been on the east side. And when we moved to Carson, well, a little backstory, I lived in Linwood. Okay. My mom started to see that I was starting to hang out with the wrong crowd, starting to get in trouble, whatnot. And I think what that was the curriculum was too easy for me. I was honor roll, principal's honor roll every month when I was in Linwood. So she started noticing that I was like getting into shit.
You're looking for challenges. You're looking for outlets.
There was no real challenge. And now that I'm older and I understand that I'm an intellect, because I'm an intellect, I need constant intellectual stimulus. If I don't have that, then I start searching for it, right? So this was in fourth grade. My mom pretty much packed up the whole house and we moved to Lakewood, right? That's another part of LA. So we moved to Lakewood. It's predominantly, you know, white community and shit like that. So we moved over there. She had me in that school district. Then when times kind of got a little different, my brother and sister came. We moved back to the east side. We moved back to Carson. The Carson is not the worst area, but there are pockets that are questionable, right? But at the same time, the school, my home school that I was supposed to go to, my mom went up there and she just wasn't having it.
Yeah,
she just was not having it. She went to get my paperwork to transfer back over to the school district I was in on the other side of town, Cerritos, Lakewood area. And it just became a hassle, me going back and forth, because I would have to catch two buses. I would catch the 205 bus.
I was about to ask. I bet you remember the numbers too.
Oh, for sure. I would catch the 205 bus from my house in Carson to Artesia Station, which is in Compton, right there by the Crystal Park Casino, and there's a Best Buy and stuff over there. And I would transfer to the 130 bus, which would take me all the way up Artesia to my Gar High School. And so that just became a thing. And now, I don't know if people understand, this is one of the hardships that people that come from the environments I come from struggle with, because I actually failed my first period just due to attendance, just because I was late. So my mom, being the person that she's a superhero, was able to get in touch with Metro. MTA, the company, had to issue a statement to my school to pardon me for attendance, so that way I wouldn't fail and not graduate high school.
Say, like, Aaron has been on these buses. The problem is these buses are late, and they're constantly late, and there's nothing offered earlier, and we're not going to ask a fourth or fifth or sixth grader to get up at 3 or 4 in the morning just to catch a bus that may or may not be on time.
Well, this is in high school at this point. So I was gonna fail if that had not been the case. I've never told this story before, but my mom literally got an authorized letter from Metro, from the MTA company, pardoning me as a student at my high school for attendance. Otherwise, I would have failed. And so that became such a crazy thing that obviously I had a friend from junior high school. His name is Corey Nakahama. His mother took to me immediately and she just loved me to death. And this has been my homeboy since middle school. And his mom is white. His dad is Japanese. They ended up I ended up being at his house all the time after school. And so it turned into me spending the night. And then it's like, well, why don't you just bring a bag and you could just stay over? It don't make sense for you to go home at this point. And so it ended up becoming such a thing that Ernie and Ito would allow me to stay there during the week to go to school, to go to high school. And so I just became a part of the family. Now I'm just the black brother, right? And they fed me. They took me on trips. They literally were my family. Like I saw my mother on weekends, right? So that was my family. And so a white woman and a Japanese man pretty much took me in, and my mom would give, well, there's an EBT card now, but back then there were food stamps.
Yeah.
So to contribute to the household, my mom would give Ernie half of the food stamps that she would get on welfare to contribute to my eating because I'm fat. So, so she would give Ernie food stamps to contribute, and they did everything for me, bro. Like she did. She was my mother. She was my second mom. Like, she did everything, bro. She taught me how to drive. I got my learner's permit with Ernie Nakahama. I went on trips. I learned how to bike ride. I went mountain biking. I would have never gotten these experiences had it not been for the Nakahama family, because my mother, one, we didn't have the means to do so. And two, my mom is not an outdoors person. So I got all of my outdoors culture from from being a part of the Nakahama family. And so that's how I ended up in that situation. Corey, which is my homeboy, and Tara, which is his sister, and Ernie, the mom, and Ito, their dad, all embraced me and took me in. We shared a room for, you know, a couple years. We shared his bedroom. We slept on the floor or the couch. And that was me in high school.
And the dad just recently passed away.
Yeah. I don't remember when he got diagnosed with ALS. Mm-hmm. And I remember what's so crazy to me is that when everything was going on, when they were doing the ice bucket challenges and stuff like that for the ALS, awareness for ALS, I didn't know that it would hit close to home like that. So when he got diagnosed with ALS, I remember him going through the motions, and they were really hopeful. And then they came back and just kind of told us the news, like, you know what, he's got a certain amount of time left and there's nothing we can do at this point. So I went over there, me and my mom went over there, and we had our last visit with Hero and the family. And to this day, like, I do whatever Ernie calls. Me and Ernie don't talk as much as I would like. That's just me. I don't talk to anybody as much as I would like to, but her and my mother are like this, bro. Like, so
yeah,
they're tight. So when I talk to my mom once or twice a week or whatever, she'll download all the family shit to me, like, hey, you know, Ernie said this, or, you know, she's doing a raffle to raise awareness for ALS, or they're doing a bike ride for this and that, or they're doing charity. And I just, whatever they need, it's a yes. So it doesn't matter what it is. Like, they can't call me for anything and it's a no. So that's kind of like the relationship that I have with them, because I'm just so grateful to that family.
But they didn't teach you how to change the battery in a smoke alarm?
No. So, I mean, you know what's funny? They never changed the damn batteries either. I don't know if there's an American household who proactively changes the smoke alarm battery.
No, we don't. We don't. I don't care what color you are.
I didn't even know you heard that, because I don't even hear it anymore, to be honest.
I thought I heard it once, and I'm like, okay, If I hear it again, I'm probably going to bring it up, and it's just going to work out perfectly with the timing of they taught me all kinds of things. The problem with the smoke alarms in this house is they always decide to stop working at about 3 or 4 in the morning.
Ah, yeah. See, no. No, thank you.
I thought I heard it in the background. What is, you just tweeted about this morning. What is Operation Smother?
The Operation Smother is a concept me and my manager, my business partner, Silas, came up with 2013-ish. 2013-2014-ish. It's like, I just want to smother everybody. I want people to be sick of me to where they want to throw up. Like, I want to be on radio, television, podcasting. I want to be on your YouTube. I want to be on your Vimeo. I want to be on your Instagram. I want to be everywhere to the point where it makes you, and it's not even just consumers. I'm not talking about people who love me or people who are fans of me. I'm talking about the ops, right? When we say the ops, that's a hip hop for all your white people that's listening. The ops is a hip hop euphemism for opposition and or enemies, right? So the ops, that's for them. I want to smother them people. Like, I want them to be sick of me. And that comes just from the chip that I have on my shoulder. So Operation Smother is just because I've had very productive conversations and meetings, and I have a lot of things on the horizon to contribute to Operation Smother.
What do you think about when you look back to 2020? Do you think more pandemic? Do you think more of the social justice and social awareness? What comes to mind, like, if somebody asks you in 10 or 20 years, what do you remember about 2020?
Pandemonium. Because, like, when you think about a year like 20, like, obviously, well, you can't think about a year like 2020. There's never been another year like 2020, in my opinion. Like, I wasn't around for the civil rights movement, and I wasn't around for women's act, women's rights,
yeah,
and all that shit. But I can imagine it was to the same degree, but not as much, because social media didn't exist. So for me, 2020, when I think about it, I think about social injustice. I think about the pandemic. The pandemic kind of, to be honest with you, is kind of secondary at this point. When I think about 2020, all I could think about is me being out on my bike amongst the people, and there were National Guards with loaded assault rifles standing in front of pizza shops in Santa Monica. And I mean, and it was just like, in Venice. And it was just, to me, when I think about 2020, it was like, you got to think about this, right? Okay, so look at this. Look at it from this perspective, Bender. When you have a worldwide pandemic and a deadly virus that's killing human beings at a rate that we have yet to see since probably the influenza craze, right? Or even other things that were overseas. But I'm talking about when you're talking about domestic,
right?
In America, it's influenza, and then there's COVID, right? So there were hundreds of thousands and millions of people in the streets together protesting while in the middle of a worldwide pandemic of a deadly virus that's literally killing people as we speak, right? You know how bad or how extreme the conditions have to be for people to do that? So when I think of 2020, that's the first thing that I think about. That's literally the first thing I think about, because I was there. And to be honest with you, I was just talking to somebody about this. You know, shout out to one of my friends, Debbie Brown. I love her to death. It just kind of takes me back to purpose, because I would have loved to be in the position I'm in now on the radio and have all these different outlets and put in platforms when it was fun. You know, 2012, when DJ Mustard was running the radio, being and everybody in the country was on our LA sound, right? I would have loved to be when it was fun, and you had the Tayo Cruises and you know, Calvin Harris, and it was like, I would have loved to be part of that. But I get COVID, pandemic, Black Lives Matter, Trump. Like, what the fuck? Like, so, but again, it's surrendering yourself to whatever the will of the universe may be, whoever it is you pray to or whatever you believe in, is surrendering yourself. And so I no longer try to be, I look at it like, instead of trying to be in a yacht, I'm just on a sailboat. So where the wind blows me is where I'll go. I no longer want to be on a motorized boat. I just want to be on a sailboat, figuratively speaking, because not in real life, that's some white people shit. They be out there. But figuratively speaking, I'm just in a sailboat and I go where the wind takes me. But like I said, when I think of 2020, that's what I think about. I think about Donald Trump. I think about protest. I think about Black Lives Matter. I think about, you know, all these police killing, police brutality, social injustice. And I think of a breaking point of America where it literally came to a breaking point. Like America was on a brink of, like Tamika Mallory said, we are in a state of emergency. It was a state of emergency, 2020 was. Everything about 2020 was a state of emergency, except for people like Jeff Bezos and other people who made billions of dollars. But outside of that, for everybody else, the common folk like us who have families and homes and things like that, is a state of emergency.
Did you feel ready for the platform you were put on as a DJ in 2020 or in the years leading up to it?
That's a great question, dog. I don't know, to be honest. I think we get delivered to situations whether we're ready or not, and you can adapt or die. That's just how I don't mean to be, you know, crass about it and be insensitive to people, but I think that's just what it is. Like, it doesn't matter if you're ready. It really doesn't matter. Like we live in California, right? If a massive earthquake happens right now, does it really matter if you're ready?
Right.
So
right.
I mean, some people have earthquake kits and shit like that. Me personally, I have a gun. So that's just as good as an earthquake kit, in my opinion. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Whatever I don't got, I can get. So but I'm just saying, like, I think that you're I don't think you're ever ready for the things that come to you and things that happen in life. I think life happens and you adapt or you die.
Yeah. I mean, when I lost my job in late 2019, I didn't understand why. And then when my wife in early 2020, we learned that her breast cancer had come back and had spread. And then the pandemic 2 months later, it became very clear to me why things happen. And as I say in the podcast intro, it was a gift. So I could reconnect with my family and reconnect with myself and reconnect with my God to, you know, have that kind of time mentally, emotionally, physically, just literally have the time to be able to take care of my family.
Facts. I think it set a lot of people down. 2020 set a lot of people down to recalibrate. And so I think if there was a silver lining for it, that would probably be it. When you're talking about people like family wise.
You posted recently on social media also about the greats. And if you're not paying attention to these greats and you have like LeBron and Michael and Kobe, people you've lived through. But at the end of that list, you've got the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
It's just, you know what it is? And there's never been a cinematic thing done like Marvel. Like what they have been able to do over the last 2008 to now, I don't know all the math, but since 2008 is something that I've never seen done before in film. Like I'm in. Like I'm all the way in. I'm watching WandaVision. I'm watching I'm watching the animated, bro. I'm subscribed. Shout out to there's a guy named Eric Voss, and he hosts a YouTube channel called New Rock Stars. Mm-hmm. I am subscribed to that, and I'm watching that shit like it's the new Avengers movie dropping. I gotta go see the breakdowns. I gotta see a trailer break. They break down the trailers. I'm watching trailers like they're music videos. So like, and I'm a hard person to get, bro. Like I don't really give a fuck about a lot of stuff. So when you get me, it's just like, bro, you got me. And I think that what Kevin Feige and Marvel Studios has done is unparalleled in any cinematic thing ever, anything has ever been done, because the stories that they're telling in succession and the way that the interconnectivity of it all, that's just a piece of it. The actual gem about the Marvel Cinematic Universe that people don't actually understand and realize is happening right under their nose is they are making genre movies. This movie's a comedy. This movie's an action film. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness is going to be semi-horror film. Like, they're making witchcraft, sci-fi. Like, it's genre now. Like, it's not even just, oh, that's a comic book movie. You know, like, the only thing that I've seen come close is the Dark Knight series, and shout out to Christopher Nolan, the Nolan brothers. The only thing that I've seen that comes even close to that is the Dark Knight series. I think, personally, that the Nolan brothers need to be brought in to restructure the whole DC universe. That shit needs to be blown up. And they need DC, and the, no disrespect, I love DC and I don't want no smoke, but they need to just blow that whole shit up. Keep Gal Gadot. I like Gal Gadot.
Yeah.
Keep her.
Yeah.
She's fire. Wonder Woman, the first one, was fire. Wonder Woman 84, that shit wasn't good. That shit was trash, to be honest with you. But if they brought in the Nolan brothers to do what Kevin Feige did for the MCU, I think everybody would be watching the DC shit like we watching the Marvel shit. But anyway, I just had to get that off. But to get back to the Marvel Cinematic Universe,
yeah,
it's genre. And the reason why the hidden gem within the MCU is the fact that they're making genre movies, but utilizing their universe to tell the stories. And that shit has never been done before, in my opinion.
Did they get you from jump?
Oh, from jump. I mean, I'm a Marvel guy, bro. Like, damn, I wish I could show you.
Yeah.
But look at.
Oh, you've got the Captain America shield.
Yep.
You've got the shield.
I got a replica right there. And then I got the Marvel stuff up there. I got T'Challa right here. I got Tony Stark. You know what I'm saying? Rest in peace to Chadwick.
Yeah.
I got T'Challa. You know what I'm saying? I got Tony. But I'm just saying that to say, like, I'm all the way in on it. And I think that it's one of them things that it's just, to me, it's just the beauty of it, bro. Like, the beauty of the MCU is the storytelling is compelling. It's not just a bunch of motherfuckers on screen fighting. And I think that's where other franchises go wrong. It's just let's just pack as much action as we can and just do as much VFX. It's like, bro, it's the storytelling. The stories is what get us. I care about Wanda and Vision's relationship like I did Jack and Rose on the goddamn Titanic. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just things like that, bro.
You were a nerd growing up, outcast. You would skate. Blink 182, I think, was one of your first like favorite bands.
I had a skateboard right there.
How was that growing up, considering you're in Linwood, you're in Lakewood, you're in Carson? There are people who look like you, but not necessarily into the same things as you.
I was the weirdo, bro. And so, like, because I was weird, like, people didn't really like, they always like the people, like the dudes, let's say the street guys, right? Like the street dudes that are wearing my neighborhoods when I was growing up just kind of looked at me as, oh, that's the little square homie. That's they call me. Like, he's a square. He don't participate in none of the street shit. He don't gangbang. So what they kind of did was they kind of embraced that element of me because I was so technologically advanced and into video games. Because I was such a nerd, I was able to help them with my nerd shit. So like fix their, you know, I would be able to fix their Nintendo for them, or like fix their Sega for them, or, you know, different things like that. Help them set up email. Like my boy, shout out to my boy Pun. My boy Pun is a street dude, but he's a reform now. He's in the music industry. They manage, he's part of active management. They manage 24K Golden. They managed a lot of big artists coming out, Sage the Gemini, fucking everybody. And when Pun got out of jail, I taught him how to use email. He didn't know how to use a laptop. So I literally taught him how to use Gmail and set up his email for him and taught him how to use it.
Because
he didn't have the skills or the wherewithal to understand how to work email. So I think those were my rites to passage, I guess you could say, within my ecosystem of people who weren't like me. So they always accepted me and respected me because it's not like I was just like, thought I was better than them. It's like, no, let me help you with this. Let me, let me teach you how to do this.
How close were you to crossing that line into their life while also still, you know, maintaining your interests, like, you know, the technology and things like that, like helping them do shit that you probably shouldn't help them with?
I mean, I've never really been, I actually, you know what? Allegedly, I may have crossed the line one time with some cards or something, allegedly, but outside of that, I've never dabbled in that world because I just always thought it was dumb. Now, there's been times when me and my mom have fell on hard times, and I did some things that I probably shouldn't have done. But outside of that, I always looked at them as being like, why would you do that? Like, who signs up for that? Like, that's why I've never like thought about like, oh, I'm gonna join a DJ crew, or oh, I'm gonna be part of a fraternity, or, and I'm not disrespectful, I'm, you know, to each his own, but I've never looked to be a part of anything like that, because I always be like, well, I'm doing this over here, and if people fuck with me, they gonna come and join my shit, as opposed to me signing up for theirs. So I've always had the entrepreneurship and the mind state that I'm gonna start something, and I want people to be a part of what I'm doing, as opposed to me going and being part of what they're doing.
8 or 9 o'clock is my girl's bedtime, and I usually hop onto IG while they're trying to fall asleep, and I'll sometimes see a DJ head live with somebody else, some artist who's trying to pitch their stuff so that they can get your feedback. How did that start, and how do most up-and-coming artists, wannabe artists, aspiring singers, DJs, rappers, how do they usually take head's honesty?
Honest feedback started as a thing that I just started going live. Obviously, during the pandemic, we all kind of went to our platforms to still connect with other people. And right in the beginning of the pandemic, like, we were all working from home. Like, it was like everybody was at the house, right? Shelter from home was the rhetoric. So it's like, well, damn, let me just go live and talk to people. So I was just going live and talking to people. And then artists started coming and like, hey, let me play you this. And I'm like, all right, I'll listen to it. And are you cool with me telling you the truth, though? And they're like, yeah, I want to. Yeah. So I'm like, all right, cool. So then it organically happened. And I just developed a show out of it called Honest Feedback with DJ Head, where artists will play me their music and I would tell them the truth. This is no different than me going in the studio and with my friends or with the homies and doing the same thing. It just became now a show that I would do online. And it just kind of took off to the point where people all over the world, from other countries, Jamaica, the UK, like Italy, like France, everywhere, people were just on my live, and I would just take people live. It'd be 1 in the morning here and 10 o'clock in the morning overseas somewhere. So it's like, it's dark in here and it's midday out there. And it's like, what the fuck, where are you at? He's like, oh, I'm in Italy. It's like, well, can I play you my record? How did you find me?
Let's start there.
Yeah, let's start right there. So it became really organic, word of mouth thing. It would spread like crazy. And then it just kind of became my thing. And people would tune in to me to get honest critiques on music, because that's what I do anyway. I just always keep it real with people about their music. If something is good, I'm going to tell you it's good. If I don't think it's good, I'm going to tell you this, it's not good. Or if it's really bad, hey, this shit is trash, bro. Like, you know, like, maybe you could be a publicist or something. Like, I don't. So, that's how it ended up happening. And then it just kind of took off from there. Right now, as we speak, literally before I got on with you, I just got off a call because the new iteration of Honest Feedback is going to be amazing. I can't talk about it yet, but I have a lot of collaborators. I have some interesting sponsors and parties involved. Honest Feedback is going to be a fully produced show moving forward.
This is not just something you've done for IG, but you did that for Nipsey Hussle. You've done that for other artists over the years. I've got two questions based on that. First off, how did you sink into that reputation? You know, you get that reputation of the honest feedback in the studios with the artists. And also, do you know of artists who don't invite you to the studio because they don't want to hear your shit?
Yeah.
Somebody will lean over. We should call head. No. I don't want to hear what he thinks, because I have a feeling.
I got that reputation because it's something that I've always done. Like, my come up in LA is like that. I came up with the artist. I didn't come up with the industry. So all of my homies are artists, and I've never been the type of sugarcoat things. I would make like, so again, and I don't know if I ever told you this story, but shout out to my big homie Glasses, G Malone. He fed me every day. Like, he literally paid for my food every day, right? And I would tell him his shit was trash. So just to put things in perspective, everybody, do you think you get a pass? Like, this man, we would be in the studio. I would tell him his music is slow. I mean, your music is trash. It's too fucking slow. You're making rap, blues. Nobody wants to hear that shit. And then expect him to buy me food afterwards. So for the artists that think that they're exempt, you're not exempt, bro. That's how I started having that reputation, is because, well, it would be, we would be in the studio with Ty Dolla $ign or TDE or anybody. Like, people think I'm bad. They should have been around for those early TDE days where we were in Top Dog's back house, and we were in there. That was some real critique going on in there. The shit that Schoolboy Q and J-Rock and them used to say to each other was crazy. So I think people look at me like, because I'm like, I do it publicly, but you should hear what's said behind closed doors. All I do is remove the door and let you see what people are saying. So that's kind of how I garnered that reputation, is because I would tell them anyway. I just had to learn tact. And now I only respond to questions that are asked, as opposed to be just walking in a room and saying, hey, that shit's whack. Whose song is that? Like, I used to do that. Now I don't do that, because I understand you didn't ask me, and I matured. But if you ask me, I'm going to tell you. Then the other, to answer your other question, there's been a couple of people who duck me. You know, they duck me. They just like, you know, or they'll just say, hey, I don't want your opinion. Bet. Say no more. I won't give it to you. And that's fine. I don't take it offensively, but because I know, I respect those people more, actually, to be honest with you. I respect them both on both ends. I respect an artist that's willing to go live with me and in front of hundreds of people, me tell them that their music is trash and they don't want to fight me, right? And then I also respect an artist that's like, hey, I can't handle that honesty. I don't want to hear your shit. Because that takes a certain level of self-awareness, and that means you've done the work on yourself. So I respect that a lot.
I want to ask about Homegrown Radio, you and Chuck Dizzle. You got that call earlier this year.
So shout out to Boulay Kev, my old co-host. He was let go from iHeart. And honestly, and I don't know if I've ever talked about this publicly, but the way Kev handled that was very admirable. Like, Kev, to me, showed a lot of class and a lot of heart that I didn't know he had, to be honest with you. Like, Kev is a real asshole. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, your IGs. the stories you two would post.
Even with when they put us on the air together, me and Bootleg Kev, it was like, oh, shit. Like, we're going to put two alpha assholes on the air. Let's see what happens, right? And so when we got the call, he was like, look, bro, I want you to do your thing. I want you to thrive. Like, I want you and Chuck to be the biggest. And it was just like, bro, you just got let go. Like, that shit's crazy. So to me, I can't say anything negative about Kev because of that. And I just wanted to give him those flowers publicly. But when we got the call, when we got the call about Homegrown being the new night show in LA, it was almost surreal. It was surreal. It was like, wait, what? And it was just like, one of those things where, like, are you serious? It's like, yeah, you know, my boss was like, this is not a temporary thing. Like, I want this to stick. I want it to work. And I want this to be a long-term investment for the company. And when he said that, I was like, wow. And that just because, you know, I mean, we talked about our origins over before, but we don't come from this. This was never an option for us. This was never available to us to even be thought of to be on the radio doing Homegrown Radio one night a week, let alone six. So that being said, that call was very surreal. For me personally, I mean, Chuck too. Chuck still, to this day, like when I go to work later, we still have moments where we look around like, they really let us in here. Like we have key cards and we could turn the microphone on and say what we want to say. Like, they really fucking let us in, bro. Like, and you got to think, we were doing homegrown radio in his apartment on makeshift equipment. And like, bro, this was not something that we thought feasible to us. This was not available to us. And I'm not even going to say it's a dream come true, because we never dreamt of it. We actually started homegrown to be the anti-establishment because we never felt like they would let us in anyway.
One of the things I texted you about a few weeks ago that I know we need to make sure we talk about on the podcast. You had a conversation with somebody on your IG Live about how black people shower compared to how white people shower. And I think it was JoJo, right? It was JoJo. It was my guy,
shout
JoJo.
JoJo's in that bin with you, with my favorite white people.
That hit home. I felt attacked. I felt. Now, I do use a washcloth, okay?
Okay.
However, I just kind of let anything below my thighs, generally speaking, that just kind of washes itself, man. I wash the hot spots. And like maybe once a week.
So it's true that white people don't wash their legs?
Generally speaking, yeah. Yeah, it is.
Why not though? Why don't you wash your legs? Like the same energy you wash your arms, right?
Sometimes, most days. Most days, yeah.
So when you in the shower, you don't hit this part?
Sometimes. I'll go forearms. And I'll go up into the pits, you know, and then the lower region hotspot, yes.
Yeah.
And then I'm good.
No, you're not good. You're not good, bro. So okay, so look, this is what I'm saying, bro. Why even get in then? Why even get in the shower in the first place if you're not gonna hit everything?
Yeah, it's actually, you know what, it doesn't really apply to the shower specifically, but that's something my wife would say, was like, if you're not going to do 100, why are you even going to start?
For what reason? You know what's interesting, though? When I was a kid, my mom used to beat my ass. She used to whoop me, right? Is there a statute of limitations on child abuse? Anyway.
I think we've all got claims.
She used to whoop my ass, bro. And my mom, I remember trying to finesse. Because kids don't like to bathe. That just is what it is, right? Kids very rarely like to bathe. So when I remember getting in the shower and she was like, did you take a shower? I'd be like, yeah. And my whole front is wet. My back is dry as like when I got in. So I would get out the shower with a dry back. And she would whoop my, like, get your ass back in the shower. Like how you take a shower and your back is dry? So my question to you is, how do you take a shower and you like, what is the purpose of taking the shower if you're not going to, you know, wash everything?
Well, all the soap is going to run down. I mean, we've got gravity working in our favor.
Yeah, but not for the, like this part of it. So you're saying, when last time you think you washed this part of your arm, the backside of your wrist?
I have. Right here. I will say I have taken showers. Where like I come in from a run. Now here's the thing. When I come in from a run, it's head to toe. It doesn't matter. But okay. But like there have been times when I didn't realize that underside of my forearm was dirty and I didn't really wash it, you know? And I'd get out and I'd start to dry off and I'd be like, where is that dirt? Oh, okay. All right, I gotta go back in.
Wow. that's just so amazing to me.
I also don't really wash my jeans.
What you mean?
Yeah, I just don't. I just generally don't wash my jeans.
Wait,
I thought that might get you. Yeah.
So wait, so
maybe a couple times a year I'll wash my jeans. Now this is, if I'm painting or doing some kind of like work like that, then yes. But if it's just everyday wear, then jeans aren't meant to be washed, man.
This is crazy, bro. This is crazy. So what about, why won't you send them shits to the dry cleaners?
I just don't. I just they wear better. They wear better when they're not washed.
Bro, you got to be kidding me. So this the under part of your wrist, this part and your jeans be dirty as a motherfucker. You know,
and my feet. Don't worry about my feet. Don't forget about the feet.
And your feet. Yeah, you know. So white people don't wash their feet, right? And so how if you're okay. Based on your theory, gravity's carrying the soap downward, correct?
Yes.
But you're standing in the shower. So if you're standing in the shower, your foot is planted in the shower floor.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
How is the soap supposed to lather the underside of your foot? So by your logistics, the underside of your foot ceases to be clean as well.
The level of disdain on your face right now and disbelief and just bewilderment at this conversation. Look at that was the rapper who just started going like speaking in tongues or something like that a couple of years
Haiti
ago.
Haiti baby.
Okay. The look you're giving me right now is that look. It's the Haiti baby look.
Definitely is. It definitely is. I just don't understand. I just don't understand because and this is what I was talking to JoJo about. I'm like so what do you mean like you don't like
because he doesn't do washcloths.
He doesn't do washcloths. I'm like, bro,
at least I do a washcloth.
Yeah, but you don't hit everything.
I just don't use it on everything.
At least JoJo is hitting everything with the bar of soap. Like you Well, first of all, who uses bar soap?
Yeah, that's where he's. How is that man in 2021 not doing some sort of body wash?
Bro, you got to do body wash.
As pretty
bro,
as that like, man is, really? You're not doing
yo,
body
JoJo's
wash?
Beautiful. JoJo's a beautiful man.
He really is, but, seriously.
But I just don't, I don't know. It's just not comprehending to me. I'm literally trying to compute it in my mind.
I know,
like,
I can bro. Tell. I can tell you're not waiting for me. You're waiting for your brain to make sense of it.
Now, do you think this is the consensus amongst all, you know, Caucasus Mountain descendants, or yes. Is this like?
I really think it is. Honestly,
oh, that's
I've heard enough conversations on the radio with enough white people talking with black people. Either their friends or coworkers, either podcasts or on the air, whatever the case, there is enough of a sample size to know that most of us white people don't either use washcloths or wash our feet in the shower.
That's so wild, bro. That's so wild, bro. That's crazy. That's so crazy. What the fuck is going on, bro?
All right, where can people hear you? Where can people find you, whether it's on social or on the air or podcasts, all of that stuff? Drop it.
Man, DJ HED socials, you know, Real 92.3, iHeart. Real 92.3, if you in LA, if not, you know, you can listen online, but Real 92.3, Monday through Saturday, 7 p.m., Homegrown Radio, the podcast and the show. And then also... new segment I got doing with Big Boy in the morning called Head Talks. I do Head Talks anyway on social, but you know, shout out to Big Boy and Jason. They decided to, you know, they wanted me to be a part of the morning show. So Head Talks is now going to be on the morning show with Big Boy's Neighborhood a couple times a week. Also, make sure that you subscribe to the podcast, Homegrown Radio.
Head man, I love you, man. I appreciate it.
Man, I appreciate you, bro. Like, hey, you know what, Joe? Just try washing the bottom of your feet, you know, see how you feel one day. You might fuck around and it might be a whole new world for you.
All right, so lay it on me. Where do you stand? Bar of soap, washcloth, always head to toe, or do you sometimes do what I do, let gravity do its thing? Let us know on social media. Tag DJ Head and Aaron Bender on Instagram and Twitter. All my links are at aaronbender.com. Would appreciate if while you're here, subscribe to the podcast, rate, review, share. If you have guest ideas or comments, email me, aaronbendermedia@gmail.com. Be well, and thanks for listening.